Welcome to this new episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast by RFI English with me, Melissa Shemam. Every month, I will be looking at one of the biggest issues on the continent, one country or one idea at a time. 2024 is a big election year for the African continent, with no less than 16 countries due to hold general or presidential elections, starting with Comoros in January and continuing through to Ghana in December, including South Africa and Rwanda. And a very important poll is the presidential election in Senegal, considered by many as a beacon of democracy in West Africa, a region facing increasing instability. Now, if you've been following the news there, you all know that the country was plunged into a crisis when the president, Macky Sall, suddenly decided to postpone the vote, supposed to take place by the end of February. In response, protests erupted from supporters of the opposition and all sides of the civil society. The first round of the vote has finally been scheduled for the 24th of March. Now, I went to Dakar, the capital of the country, to discuss with journalists, protesters, members of civil society and economists to understand how the country has been affected by this crisis and what is now at stake with the coming election. While I was there, I spoke to Ndongo Samba Sila, a development economist and author based in Dakar. He's written extensively on the state of democracy in Africa and on how to transform its economies. We talked about how this multiple crisis affects democracy. He first told me how election disruption is actually not new in Senegal, giving examples from the end of the French colonial rule.
I could not say that I was surprised, because most of us knew to some extent that this could be contested elections. And as a scholar of democracy, elections in Francophone Africa, the question that I asked myself was that would Senegal organize elections that would for the first time has as a winner someone who is a kind of anti-imperialist nationalist candidate? Because for the 16 countries south of the Sahara that were formerly French colonies, if you look at the historical record, you could not find one that is, you know, have a kind of a nationalist or anti-imperialist profile that ever managed to win a normal election, you see. And so for the first time, I was asking myself, is it possible? And if ever elections are organized and we have Bassirou Diomaye Faye or people, someone like Sonko, would he stay long in power? Those were the kind of questions. So when Macky Sall decided to cancel and then to postpone the elections, I said, well, this is truly disappointing, but this fits the historical record so far. So I'm talking from a very special point of view of someone who has studied elections in the formerly colonized territories of France, let's say since the French Revolution to now.
Actually, when people say this is new for Senegal, you kind of disagree.
Yeah, in fact, this is not new, because most people ignore is that elections and elites, they have the same grammatical root. It's the same word. So elections are the means through which elites are created. And for more than two centuries in the French Empire, elections have been regularly organized to put in place elites that would be loyal, that would legitimate empire. That have been the historical role of elections. They have never been, you know, surprising to some extent. Senegal's image as a beacon of democracy has also been not true. It's a kind of a romanticized view, you see. The history of Senegal, you know, has been marked, electoral history, by many episodes of violence. But people, you know, forget that. People forget also that, you know, when Senegal introduced this, what they call the tripartism, that means three political parties corresponding to three political trends, socialism, liberalism, and communism, we had the first multipartite, really multipartite election in 1978. But between 1978 and 1998, the turnout to the presidential and parliamentary elections declined systematically from one election to the next. That means we started from something like 70% of turnout to something like 35% between 1978 and 1998. You can say that Senegal has become a mature democracy, while most of the people could not go to vote because of violence. because of the political tricks used by the regimes in power to discourage especially the young people to go to the polls, you know.
How would you summarize the presidency of Macky Sall? Was he a better president for like everyday life Senegalese? And this was derailing some sort of like good governance period? Or were the sign of his leadership already at the red light?
It's a very, you know, mitigate, if we could say, in terms of economic balance sheet, in the sense that if you look at the economic figures, it seems like he did well, very well in terms of economic figures, because Senegal, for example, when Macky Sall came to power 2012 to 2018, we had 6% annual rate of GDP growth. So that is impressive. And you have many infrastructures, etc. And despite the COVID pandemic, we have better figures than most of the countries in Africa and maybe, outside Africa. But the thing is, this did not translate this economic growth in, you know, more prosperity for the ordinary people, for example. And you could see that through all these young people who are unemployed or underemployed and who sometimes take makeshift boats to try to join the Mediterranean, or when they accumulate savings, they want to go to the U.S. Via Nicaragua. Myself, I saw that, you know, and I was personally shocked. But the other side is, you know, the institutional development. And under Macky Sall, there have been an institutional collapse of Senegal in the sense that we have never seen so much state violence in this country, so much death, especially the young people, you know. Senegal, we were used to having demonstrations, I mean, at least since the 2000s, where people could demonstrate freely and no one would ever think that someone would die because of demonstrations. Now, every demonstration, you could think that people could die because of, you know, state violence and also all the political stakes now related to elections and so on. So we have never seen such institutional decay in Senegal. So, I mean, when you look at the economic numbers, those that the IMF, World Bank like, Senegal is superb. But when you look at the social reality, it's not superb. When you look at the institutional reality, I mean, it is, I would say, really something unprecedented.
In the first part of this interview, Samba Sila mentioned one of the most vocal of the 18 candidates, Bassirou Diomaye Faye, and his mentor, Ousmane Sonko. Both were released from prison just as the delayed campaign started. Faye is seen as the strongest contender against the former Prime Minister, Amadou Ba, who's running for the majority of the President Macky Sall. Voters' concerns reflected in their protest are mainly about unemployment and the lack of opportunity for the youth in a country with a lot to offer in principle. In Dakar, I also met with the journalist Ayoba Faye, who works for Afrique Press, to discuss how people are experiencing this economic slowdown on the ground. Here is what he had to say.
The economy is stuck and the main university has been closed for 9 months for political reasons. In addition, the government has sold fishing licenses to the EU and big Chinese ships. Now they're fishing in our waters, local fishermen are losing out. That's why they're taking small boats and try to reach Spain.
Economist Nongo Damba Sila says opening up Senegal's economy to companies from wealthier countries has left ordinary people struggling.
When you liberalize your trade, external trade, I mean the agricultural sector, the fisheries sector, etc., that means that you create competition for your domestic industry or at least for your domestic workers. And this happened in the fisheries sectors. And most of, you know, the people have, you know, very rudimentary, you know, technology. They have boats that are not that efficient to catch the fish when it is very remote, you know, in the sea, etc. So that means that most of the fish now had been, you know, caught by foreign boats, European boats, Russian boats, you know, Chinese boats. And these people, obviously, they lost their employment. Some of them, they reconverted and now they are trying to help others to go to the Mediterranean to try to join Italy or Spain. And you could see that the local market also, prices have increased, prices of fish, while, you know, normally this is produced here and and this should be cheap, you see. So these are, you know, the underside of, you know, trade liberalization agreements. So to some extent, you could say that the people who try to join Europe, they are just following the resources. The resources are going to Europe, they are going to the US, they are going to China, and they are following the resources because they don't have the industries to transform these resources locally, and sometimes they are facing foreign competition for which they are not equipped. Competition, it could be good because it could create emulation, it could create more productivity, etc. But sometimes it could be devastating. In the case of Senegal, we could see that in the fisheries sector, in the agricultural sector.
With the uncertainty and a sharp decrease in tourism, the political crisis led to an economic one. Young people are particularly affected. So they're looking to migration as an answer. Many young people in Senegal hope that they will find a better future in Europe. Here is what some of them had to say about that.
Unemployment is causing a lot of people to lose hope. But I want to tell them that, like myself, they can find training and support from charities. They can learn new skills, work and help their families. It's true that many young people want to leave. They are desperate. Given the social pressures, if they feel they're failing, then right away they want to go.
So overall, according to Samba Sila, this election could be crucial to bring change. What he recommends is to get rid of old colonial economic tools inherited from the Bretton Woods Accords. He says figures like GDP don't tell the full story and calls for a radical rethink of Senegal's economic policies, including getting rid of its current shared currency, the CFA franc, which he says is a legacy of French colonialism.
It's not relevant. The same thing for the GDP, gross domestic product. I said, for example, under Macky Sall, we have 6% between 2012 and 2018. You could see that, oh, it's nice, etc. But what you look at the social realities, you say no. Because, for example, there is a difference between GDP and gross national income. For example, when you have a pattern of extraverted economic development, your GDP will be higher than your gross national income. That means that difference is what is repatriated abroad. In the case of Senegal, for example, every year we would pay 200 billion CFA franc as interest on the external debt, not the principal, interest. And what is being repatriated as returns on foreign debt investment, that means productive investment by foreigners, it's 300 billion. And now, with the exploitation of oil and gas, it will go to something like 1,200 billion every year, you see. And so you'll have rates of economic growth of 10%. Say, oh, Senegal is a star, economic star. But no, you won't find that, you know, you won't find economic development in your country. So that means that you have to have indicators that allow you to understand your own realities. And that has been part of my intellectual work. And I'm not isolated in the sense that there are many Global South economists, and even I work for Global South Development Economists Association, which try, you know, to give other perspective. Because we are in a global economic and financial system that is asymmetric, born in 1944, at a period where most of the Global South, at least in Asia and Africa, were under colonial status. So this world economic and financial system does not work for us. And now we have global challenges like climate change, and it can't be addressed if we do not reform the international financial system. So that means that if there are not real transfers, net transfers from the global north to the global south, it will not be possible to address climate change. So we need to change the system, but the system has been created, I mean, for the victors of World War II. Now this has to change.
It made me think about ECOWAS and maybe France CFA, so that might be a tool that is outdated.
Yes, yeah. The CFA franc was created in 1945 for a special purpose, because the Bretton Woods system created the US dollar hegemony. And the French economy was in very bad shape and needed to have access to raw materials, but not priced in US dollar, because France did not have enough US dollars. So the CFA franc, and all the countries using the CFA franc belonging to what is called the France zone, they allowed France to have access to the imports needed by French industries like uranium, manganese, like oil, etc., without dispersing US dollars. So saving its own US dollars. And at the same time, those countries, when they had trade surpluses, that means that they sold more than they bought from abroad. They would accumulate US dollars, and those US dollars would be taken by France, converted in French franc, and they would be, you know, held at the French treasury. So this was a system created by France to adapt in a system dominated globally by the US dollar. Now we are 80 years after that, mostly 80 years, and all these countries using the CFA franc, they are poor. You know, countries like Gabon, they should be like Dubai, very rich countries. Equatorial Guinea, the Republic of Congo, because they are small countries, small population, but vast resources. So they should be rich. There should be no poor in Gabon or in Guinea Equatorial or in Congo, even a country like Senegal. But we don't have the currency system because this currency system is not designed for economic development, but it was designed to serve, you know, colonial extraverted interests. And still you have the elites to say that this is wonderful. It benefits them. Every time they say, oh, if you exceed the CFA, it will be the catastrophe. I say, you have the Seychelles. It's an archipelago, 100,000 people. They have their own currency issued by their own central bank. Their currency is pegged to any currency. It is floating. So that means if you say you can't manage a currency, you could not create economic development. That's why we need leadership.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks to you.
Thanks to Ndongo Samba Sila, an economist and author based in Dakar. This was the new episode of Spotlight on Africa by RFI English. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next month with a focus on another key election in another part of the continent. In the meantime, for more African and French news, you can go to our website, rfi.fr/en.